Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
Seachtain, an Indo-Askeilige.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chur, agus súligam amach an seo, gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara I gcuir na meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthchar an reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthchar san I lis dúthail agus go mbeadh fanacht gáir a chloig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhíonn ann tar d'oraibh sé sin. Vin Marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Hello and you're welcome to The Big Tech Show with me, Adrian Wecker, the tech editor of the Irish and Sunday Independent. And this week we're talking about phones, particularly the iPhone 12, the iPhone 12 Pro. We're going to have a look at the iPad Air and a couple of other models in between. Delighted to be joined by Mark Cavanagh, digital editor of Buzz.ie and senior assistant editor at The Star. Mark, welcome.
Hi, Adrian. How are you?
Good.
Are you excited about the iPhone 12?
I am excited about both the iPhone 12 and the iPhone 12 Pro, which I have right here in front of me. For anyone's watching a video, you'll see them. And actually, what's surprising to me is this is the first iPhone launch where I actually think I would recommend the iPhone 12 over the iPhone 12 Pro, even though I have both them, you know, and the 12 Pro has some significant advantages. This is the first time where the 12, they've actually put too much good stuff in the 12, in my opinion, which is good for, you know, punters. But it's hard to justify buying the 12 Pro unless you really like that stainless steel look, or unless you really do want that extra zoom camera. And a little bit of extra screen brightness. There's almost nothing else in the 12 Pro to justify the extra £200, actually £250 compared to the 64 gigabyte phone, but you'd never recommend getting a 64 gigabyte phone. So comparing the 128 gig variants, it's £200 difference. And honestly, this basic iPhone is kind of amazing. It's kind of amazing. Do you remember the old iPhone 4S? Do you remember that phone?
Sure do, yeah.
The iPhone 5. I mean, I think a lot, like, I don't know what you think about this, but for a lot of people, that was the industrial design high point of Apple's handsets.
I love the design. I got very excited when I saw it. I know we all knew it was coming, but during the event, when I actually saw it, I got thrilled by it. And I love that blue color as well. All of the colors in all of the four models are excellent. It's obviously very similar to the iPad Pro's design and the iPad Air's design as well. And yeah, it does hark back to that classic sort of industrial minimalist sort of look.
Because you've probably found this from reviewing smartphones as I have. Almost every new phone we get in is now basically a black, shiny glass slab. And that's when you've got a few of them on the table, it's hard to tell them apart. You can actually tell this one apart because it's a proper rectangle. It's got proper, you know, kind of flat sides. It's actually easier to tell than, you know, the Samsungs, Huawei's, OnePlus's, Nokia's, Sony's, whatever they may be. Actually, maybe the Sony's slightly different because it has that sort of slim form factor, you know, that sort of, they go for the skinny look. But so the iPhone 12 is actually to be recommended over the iPhone 12 Pro. I never thought I'd hear myself saying that.
It's interesting that you say that. Last, in the year just gone since the 11 came out, the 11, the standard 11 was a much bigger seller than the two Pro models. Mm. I used the 11 last year and I had the XR the year before. Mm-hmm. The two things missing would have been the difference in camera, but also that full HD OLED screen. Yeah. And I did notice, you know, I did feel at various points throughout the year on the 11, when you're reviewing sort of 4K Android smartphones with top of the range OLED panels, and then you go back to that 720p LED screen, there was a huge difference. So I'm really excited and delighted that they've upgraded the screen on the 12. And I do get your point about the difference between the two. You're someone that loves photography. You take a lot of pictures, and you know, in a number of reviews, I've seen you write about the need for your own personal needs, the versatility in the camera range. So if you were buying the iPhone 12, would you go for the Pro over the 12?
I'd go for the Pro, and you've hit the nail on the head. And the reason I'd go for the Pro is exactly for that reason, because I'm into photography and I need that extra zoom. I need that third zoom lens there. I need it. Now, it's not actually a very deep zoom lens. It's only a 2x optical zoom lens. Apple says it's 4x, but what they're doing is it's 4x of the ultra wide of the 0.5x. So it's actually a 2x optical zoom. Almost every other phone manufacturer's flagship will give you more, 3x, 4x, 5x. Huawei's very good at that. Samsung's pretty good at that. And yet I still need it. I definitely need that zoom for my own personal reasons. Is that worth an extra £200? It is to me, but it's not going to be to 95% of people. What I'm really waiting for is the iPhone 12 Pro Max, because that has what they call sensor shift optical stabilization. It's like a DSLR camera. The stabilization on iPhones has always been brilliant for video. If you walk down the street with an iPhone in your hand and another phone in your other hand, and you're just walking normally, you've no gimbal or anything like that, and you look back at the footage from the two phones, 3 times out of 4, the iPhone footage will be smoother. Not always, but mostly. This is going to take it up another notch with the iPhone 12 Pro Max, because it has this extra stabilization technology. Like, Apple is making phones now that actually can genuinely be used as proper B-roll or A-roll professional cameras. I mean, when you combine that with the 10-bit HDR that in Dolby Vision that is capable on these iPhone 12 devices, and on the 12 Pro you can shoot in what they call Pro RAW as well now. That's not Mickey Mouse stuff. That's actually professional big screen photography and videography. Certainly as a B cam, maybe even an A cam. And the problem is because I'm a vain individual, I imagine that's what I'm going to do with it, which of course I won't. But I love the idea. I love waking up in the morning and looking down at my smartphone thinking, I'm going to go out and make, you know, something incredible today. And I love the idea that I have a tool in my pocket that lets me do that. So yes, that's why I'll spend the extra £200. But I'm telling you, for the vast majority of people, I mean, what are you getting for the iPhone 12 Pro over the iPhone 12? You're getting steel, okay? You are getting steel. You're getting this lovely steel finish, which is on the right here. If you're looking at this on the website, you get the steel finish and versus the aluminium here on the iPhone 12. But other than that, and other than the camera, there's almost nothing else you're getting.
Does the LiDAR scanner, have you noticed an improvement in your zoom photography?
I haven't ostensibly noticed it yet, but I've only been using it for a few days. So, you know, to be fair, one of the things, have you found a difference with 5G yet? I mean, the other big feature with the iPhone 12 is 5G. And yeah, I've taken it out and I put a 5G SIM in it. And yeah, I get faster speeds, same as kind of with any other phone. I don't know that it's much of a seller. I don't think it's a feature that really sells any phone at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we both live in Dublin City, and we're kind of blessed with really, really good 4G speeds in Dublin. So you know, you certainly have to go close to the mast to really do a speed test on the 5G network and see, you know, a huge difference. And there are only pockets of areas around Dublin where there are masts now. I suppose if you look at the bigger picture, what a lot of the American commentators are saying about Apple embracing 5G, no, almost reinventing 5G, it will probably, you know, open up the network a lot quicker maybe in America than it might have done. And hopefully in Europe we'll see a similar knock-on effect. I mean, obviously the rollout of 5G has been held up this year with COVID. Three were very slow starting off.
They only launched a month ago, yeah.
And I think that was on the cards for earlier this year. But Vodafone and Air have, you know, they've had a good head start on 3, but I don't think they've made much headway in the last few months.
No.
Certainly from my experience around Dublin, there doesn't seem to be.
No, they haven't. And even when you are close to a 5G cell, you, unless you're doing a speed test, you typically don't really notice it. Like, no matter what you're using, even if it's 4K video on YouTube or Netflix, you don't, I don't notice anyway when it goes from a 4G cell to a 5G cell. I don't notice any difference in the actual performance of the phone. Ironically, on the iPhone 12, the 5G does use a little bit more battery power. That's why they have this thing, this smart switching. So it's supposed to switch back from 5G to 4G when it detects that you don't need 5G. There's a setting, there's actually a setting that you can adjust whether you just want to stay on 4G or 5G all the time or smart adjustment. But I don't see it as a sales tool yet.
Well, it is in terms of future proofing. Like if you're walking into a shop at the moment and you're going to splash out between 800-900 euro and 1500-1600 euro, depending on which model you go for, you want a phone that's future proofed. 5G, I think, will be big. Maybe not next year. Probably 2022. But people are buying phones now and holding on to them maybe for 3 years. So you certainly wouldn't want to be spending €1,000 on a phone now that only has 4G. That's what
true. Yeah. By the way, one interesting point about 5G is in the States, a lot was made about the side of the iPhone, which has a little window, and that's for the millimeter wave 5G. And you don't get it, of course, on the European models because there is no millimeter wave here. Now, the thing about that is, as I understand it, I'm stand to be corrected if anybody from Apple is listening to this, millimeter wave is more expensive. And there's a kind of a, they call it a 5G tax built into the iPhone 12 in the States, which is one of the reasons, maybe one of the reasons why it doesn't come with a charger or earphones in the box, although we know, of course, it's for environmental reasons. Look, it could be for environmental reasons. I mean, to be fair, Apple does have a decent record on the environment. But one thing that struck me was that the pricing difference in Europe versus the States is not significantly different to what it was last year or the year before. And yet the American phone would seem to be more expensive to build because it has that millimeter wave built in. So it's interesting to me that maybe there's a slightly higher margin off the European iPhone 12 phones than there's off the American ones.
Possibly. I think give them credit where it's due, whatever the motives for taking the charger and the cable out, it is beneficial to the environment in many ways. So we should applaud.
It's a fair point. We live in a cynical era though, where you know, big companies' motives are often questioned. And the fact, I suppose the price of the device it's not necessarily cheaper. Now, you might argue that, you know, there's 5G chipsets and everything make it more expensive, but it's not necessarily cheaper. So you'd wonder if it's for green reasons, then maybe the price would come down. But as I said, we're in a pandemic. It's more expensive to build and deliver things at the moment. So there may not be a relationship between the pricing and the environmental thing, but just a thought, you know, just a thought. Speaking of which, I know you had you got an iPad Air. I thought I saw you unboxing one. I've been playing.
Sure, I sure did. Yeah,
playing and reviewing with one in this nice tinted green. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to have a green one too, and it's an absolutely gorgeous machine. I mean, for the price it is, and for what you're getting, I'm sure you've done benchmark tests yourself.
I have. Yeah.
I know they don't tell the whole story, and sometimes video YouTubers make a big deal out of benchmarking tests because real world tests are better indication of the power and speed. But boy, is it fast!
It really is because it has the same chip as the iPhone 12, which is that new A14 Bionic that they have, which is incredibly fast. Interestingly, because I have an iPhone, an iPad Pro 11, and I compared the two of them in terms of speed, and the iPhone, the iPad Pro 11 inch is still marginally faster, even though it has a slower chip, and that's because it has a lot more RAM. It's a lot more RAM in it, and it also has a lot more cores. It has 8 cores versus 4 cores. The one interesting thing I really found about the iPad Air was this is the first iPad, the first touchscreen work device that I've ever used that's skewed towards left-handers. What I mean by that is on the iPad Air as in any iPad or iOS device, you'll see that the it comes with this Touch ID button here at the top, right? That one there. And so instead of having a big button on the screen like the old iPads, it moves it to the power button. Okay, now that's fine. But when you connect it physically to a keyboard, where is that power button? Where's that Touch ID? It moves up to the top left corner of the screen. So to open and close it, to unlock it, or to perform those other tasks, you're now having to do it with your left index finger, not even your thumb, your left index finger. So what was the name of the... Oh, Ned Flanders. Ned Flanders and his Leftorium would be proud. This is the first left-handed computing device I've ever used.
I'm left-handed, so I've enjoyed the benefits of that this week. I think a lot of people though use the iPad as a tablet without the keyboard attached. Yourself and myself and others might use it for work a lot. I certainly use it for work-related tasks a lot. So therefore, I'd have the keyboard connected a lot of the time. Mm. But you would find that a lot of people don't attach a keyboard. So in that case, it's maybe not as skewed towards left-handed people.
Yeah, I see where you come from. I mean, you're right. When I'm reviewing these things, I do have a bit of a bias towards people who will want to do a little bit more than, watch Netflix, browse social media, Amazon, all of that. I am a slightly, but that there is a bias in my reviews that way. The only real difference I noticed between the iPad Pro and the iPad Air, despite the fact there's 200 quid in the difference, 230 quid in the difference, is the screen on the iPad Air isn't quite as bright on the iPad Pro. And I did notice that because I was, out the back working, and I noticed it kind of right away because it automatically goes up to the maximum brightness. Wasn't as easy to see stuff. Not an issue when you're indoors. The other thing, when you're swiping between screens, you do notice the lack of that ProMotion screen, the lack of that 120 hertz refresh rate. Apple told me, I wouldn't have guessed this, but Apple told me that the USB-C transfer speed on the iPad Air is only half what it is on the iPad Pro. I think it's 5 megabits per second versus 10. So if you're a videographer or photographer, you might notice again. And what's interesting to me is those particular things do actually add up for a case to the iPad Pro. Because if you look where the iPad Air is priced, it starts at, I think, €667 in Ireland. And that's for, I think it's a 64 gig model for that. I think there's two models, 64 gig and 256. So it's 667 for that. If you look where the iPad 8th generation, which is the basic iPad, is priced, it's around 480 or something like that, 470. And then the iPad Pro starts at around 900. So the iPad Air is perched almost bang halfway between those two models. And yet in functionality and looks and feel and the accessories you can use, it's way closer to the iPad Pro than it is to the original iPad. But those specific niche things, the screen refresh rate, screen brightness, USB speed, and also the storage options, the fact that you can only get it in 64 or 256. If you're into work, you're probably not going to be happy with 64. You're going to want a 256. And that brings you up to, I think, around €800 or something or more. So now so it's interesting. Apple, they're no fools. They know what they're doing with their pricing.
Is it a clever way of introducing people to the Pro model? Maybe is it now sort of an entry level Pro model?
That's the way I described it in my review was as an iPad Pro Lite. For me, it's for somebody who is thinking of a good iPad that if they want to, they can do a bit of light work on, or they want a little bit more than they would get from the basic iPad. But they're just not going to fork out 900 quid and then have to look for more for keyboards or Apple Pencils or anything like that. I think for students who have a bit of money, this is the obvious choice. For people who are kind of working at home, but maybe they they already have a large laptop or a PC with a big monitor, and they want something literally to be working around the house, but they don't want it to be too flimsy. They want something that is kind of, they basically want an iPad Pro, but they can't justify spending a grand for an iPad Pro. I think that's what this is. I think this is what it's for. I agree with you. I think this is a great, this is an amazing, a fantastic device.
And a big shout out to the smaller child, the 8th generation standard iPad, which if you, I know the basic model is only 32 gigs, but if you were clever with how you use your storage, that could be enough. It wouldn't be for the likes of yourself or myself, but for someone like my mom, what you can do with that machine for €382 is just incredible.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's very, very capable. It's, again, Apple has slightly overpowered it in terms of, in 3 or 4 years' time, that will still be able to rip through stuff that almost anybody is using. I couldn't agree with you more. While you're doing shout outs, I promised Gavin, sound engineer, I should mention that thank you to the National Newspaper of Ireland for shortlisting this podcast for Best Podcast of the Year. So that's that was kind of nice. We're the only ones from the Irish Independent to get that.
Congratulations to you both.
Did you know that this is now the most, not the longest running, but the most by episodes podcast in the Irish Independent? I think we're up to about 155 now. Almost exactly 3 years. And did you know we haven't missed 1 week?
3 years has flown in. It doesn't seem like 3 years at all. Sure,
3 years, 155, 156 episodes. You've been on 3 or 4 of them, at least.
Ah, good. Yeah. Good few, yeah.
Maybe it was, maybe the ones they were reviewing when they decided to shortlist it were the ones that you were on. It's possible.
The awards are, in general, the awards are very hotly contested this year. I was a judge on one of the categories for the first time, Broadsheet Feature, and the standard of some of the writing is just excellent. And in every category this year, I mean, there's some really good guys that didn't get a nod this year, but it's just because the standard of Irish journalism across the board for everything from business, your specialist area, to sport, to general news, and those broadsheet features, as I say, absolutely great this year to see such a high standard in Irish journalism.
Yeah. Anyway, look, right, that's our little 3 minutes of slapping ourselves on the back. What other phones have caught your eye over the last few weeks?
This week I reviewed the OnePlus 8T. It's an interesting phone in that once you get it up and running and you use it, it does exactly what OnePlus have been doing for the last number of years. It gives you an almost complete flagship experience for the price of a mid-range phone. Mm-hmm. To buy it outright SIM-free, it's €619. Mm-hmm.
That's almost exactly the same price as the Pixel 5.
But the camera experience on this, on the 8T, is, you know, the same as many other OnePlus phones. It's not quite there. Now, it's not terribly poor, but the main camera is good, but the ultra wide on it's not particularly good. And then there's two sort of lenses that you're never going to use, just so they can say it's a quad camera setup. Now, the OnePlus 8 Pro has a really superb camera system across the board. They have two really good sensors on it, a much newer Sony sensor and a 48 megapixel ultra wide that you would love. But the 8T comes up short in the camera department, but in every other way, it's got the 865 processor. It's got heaps of storage. It's got 12 gigs of RAM, or up to 12 gigs of RAM. For €619, you can't go wrong. It's an absolutely fantastic device. But when it came out, I noticed a lot of the reviewers and a lot of the coverage, because it didn't really have a headline-grabbing feature other than the 120 hertz refresh rate display, it was sort of seen as a not very exciting phone, like they haven't done anything new, because obviously the 8 Pro earlier this year had the 120 hertz display. And the only other new thing which stands out is the 65-watt charger, which you would have experienced on the Oppo Reno.
Yeah, Reno 4 Pro, yeah.
I mean, 35 minutes to charge your phone, it's just unreal.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that. So Oppo is a brand that probably a lot of Irish people aren't familiar with. When I was in Shenzhen in China last year, you know, Oppo, along with Huawei and Xiaomi, Oppo is one of the big smartphone brands. They have their own shops. They sell other stuff as well. And they've just opened here in Ireland. It's actually a guy who used to work in Huawei, Thomas Mason, who is now running the shop here. And they've launched, I think, two or three phones here in Ireland.
They will have three. There's two that have been publicly launched, and then there's a budget phone coming soon.
So the one that I was looking at, I think you were looking at as well, is the Oppo Reno 4 Pro, and it's a nice phone. It's not cheap, is the only thing. So it has a lot of good specs on it. Good, a lot of storage, very nice display, nice shape, although kind of identical to Huawei's phones and some of the Samsung phones, but that's not a bad thing. You know, it's kind of a generic shape, the curved glass at the side. It's not cheap, though. I think it costs around $799. Was that the price for it?
Yeah, the only thing about that is manufacturers call that the headline price, but I had a conversation with Thomas about that, because when you compare it to the likes of the Pixel 5 or the Oppo, or sorry, the OnePlus 8T, it does seem expensive, but he sell many of those phones at all at that price, that his target audience and what he's been sort of driven to do is to get it into the network operators on the €60 a month tariff. He says that's the most popular tariff in Ireland, and he tells me that more phones are sold that way than by buying them outright for, say, $799 or $699.
That's interesting.
From that point of view, I suppose the price maybe doesn't come into it. What I would say, maybe it if you take it and you take the OnePlus 8T and you take the Pixel 5, they are three absolutely outstanding phones for the price. If you know, in general, they fall between €600 and €800. And, you know, they have different strengths. The camera on the Pixel, I think we'd all agree, is probably superior, certainly superior to the OnePlus. And I actually like the camera on the Reno. You made an interesting point in your review about the image stabilization. I don't notice that missing so much when I'm taking stills. I've been very impressed with the night mode on it in particular. And overall, I think the camera on it's very, very good. But those three phones, if you were to buy any of those, we have the luxury of testing all the new kit and comparing them to each other. But if you're an average punter and you go into Three Mobile or Vodafone and you buy any of those phones, you're not going to be disappointed at all, because they really are excellent. When you compare them to the Note 20 Ultra or maybe the iPhone 12 Pro Max and the price, what you're getting is not, you know, a third of the power or the speed. You're getting really, really good handsets.
Yeah, I mean, the only qualification to that I would make is that the iPhone 12 mini, which is coming out next month, which essentially has almost the entire power of the iPhone 12, which is a 900 quid phone, a 900 plus quid, is coming out for around 815. So it's going to be priced at the same as the Oppo Reno 4 Pro. Now it's smaller. It has a 5.4 inch display compared to, I think it's 6.5 or 6.6 on the, maybe even 6.7 on the Reno 4 Pro. But you're into that price bracket. For me, the best value new smartphone in terms of euro for euro, if money is tight, for me has been the Pixel 5, the Google Pixel 5. It's the dullest looking of all the phones by a long way. Like, it's positively boring to look at, to pick up. It kind of feels a bit plasticky, and even though I don't think it is plastic, I think it's coated aluminium, but it feels kind of boring, and it looks like almost retro. It looks like a phone from 3 years ago. But for what you're getting, it costs just over 600 euro, I think 618 euro, and the camera on it's very, very good. It's very fast. The screen on it's very good. You get good storage, and because it's so tightly integrated with Google's own software, everything just works really, really smoothly. If it was another 150 or 200 quid, I'd say they're a little bit cheeky charging that much. But at that price, if money is tight, for me, the Pixel 5 is probably the best value phone of the flagships you can get at the moment.
It's going to face stiff competition, though, is it not, from the Pixel 4a 5G, which is not on sale yet. I think it goes on sale on the 19th of November. I could be wrong on the exact date there. That's, I think, €130 or something less expensive.
Yeah, it's €490. Yeah, it's just under 500 quid, yeah.
And it has a lot of the same features. Now, not everything, but it has a lot of the same features.
It does, and it actually, ironically, has a slightly larger screen, which is kind of funny. I don't fully understand why they did that. I think maybe they guessed that I think it's a 6.1 inch screen or 6 inch screen on the Pixel 5. I think they figure that that was the sweet spot for most people. So that they kept it at that. But I think you're right. And sure, look, even the Pixel 4a itself, which is, I think, is it under 400 quid? I remember reviewing that phone 6-8 weeks ago. And for what you're getting there, that is an unbelievable deal. That is a great phone for that kind of money. And if you don't need the 5G, you can't really go wrong with that. Yeah, but I would agree with you. I think it is going to face competition from its own.
One of the things I like about the Pixel 5, now I like yourself would be a fan of bigger screen phones. I like the extra screen real estate. We tend to use our phones a lot for work related tasks, so the bigger screen does come in handy then. But one of the most appealing features to me about the Pixel 5, I was surprised by, is actually the size and how easy it is to use one-handed. And I'd say the same for the Oppo Reno 4 as well. It's a very slim and light phone that you can use one-handed quite easily. Given that iPhone is bringing out an iPhone 12 mini for the first time, do you think that maybe heralds the start of a shift? Have we reached peak large phone? Are we going to see a shift towards smaller handsets over the next couple of years?
No, I don't think we've reached peak large phone. I don't think we've reached peak large screen yet. We may have reached peak large in your hand device, but not peak large screen. And I'll give you one reason why. If you look at take the iPhone 12 as an example, I'll just take the iPhone 12 Pro here. If you look at it here, you will see there's a border, a bezel around it. There still is a bit of a bezel, and I'm expecting that in the 12 Pro Max as well. That means that they can still increase the size of the display in a future iPhone while not increasing the size of the device. So the 12 Pro Max is a 6.7 inch screen. That's the biggest display that Apple's ever put on one of their phones. Don't forget, we all thought that a 5.5 inch screen on the iPhone 6 Plus or the iPhone 8 Plus was huge. It was a phablet. Oh my God, how will anybody ever survive with that? Now they've got a 6.7 inch screen on the 12 Pro Max. And you're seeing the same from the likes of the Note. I think the Note 20, was it 6.8? 6.8, maybe 6.9. I think we will hit the 7 inches. I think we'll hit 7 inches. That's a great phrase, isn't it? So I don't think we've reached peak phone screen size yet. And I don't think we're going back into some magic age of, oh, do you know what I really miss? I really wish I had a 4-inch phone. I don't think we're going back there at all. Even the people you know, if you think of yourself, even the people you know who you hear say that, as soon as they get used to a 5 or 6-inch phone, they themselves don't go back to a 4-inch phone. Because you could take the iPhone range. Apple still sells the iPhone SE. It was a refreshed phone. They only brought it out this year. The iPhone SE, it's a 4.7-inch screen phone. I mean, if you want a small screen, there you go.
There are two other phones that I've been testing recently. One was, we might have mentioned it on the last podcast I was on, was the Zenfone Pro 7, because there aren't showing off the flip-up screen. I really love that now. That's one of my favorite Android devices this year. Now, it's a little bit more expensive than the mid-rangers we've just talked about. I think it comes in at $899, and you can only buy it in DID electrical, which if you factor in what Thomas, someone in the industry, said to me and what I referred to earlier, they're not in the main network operator, so I wouldn't imagine it's a phone that's going to have a huge market share at the end of the year. But in terms of speed and power and the camera, it's just fantastic. The only thing about having those rear cameras on the selfie camera is sometimes they can show up things that you might not want to be shown up if you're not as
pretty. Because they're too good. Yeah. The details too good. Yeah, that's true. Although I do notice that there is a trend to try and boost the selfie cameras, actually even more than there is the rear cameras these days.
That's a fantastic phone. And the Sony Xperia 5 Mark II, or the 5-2 as they call it, which I've only had for about 10 days or so. The difference between it and the one that you reviewed recently, the Xperia 1-2, is it doesn't have a 4K screen. It has a full HD, but it has a 120 hertz refresh rate, which is the first time a Sony device has. It's got some improvements to the camera system as well. It's still, I think, very much a phone that's pitched towards content creators rather than the average Joe Soap that might walk in.
I don't get that though. I don't get their pitch there. I don't. I have it here. I mean, it actually has a lot to say for in terms of its ergonomics, because you could, it's kind of easier to hold because it's a skinny phone. I don't get their pitch that this is somehow for content creators. Yes, the camera on it is decent. It's good. Like Sony makes most of the camera sensors for almost every other manufacturer. So it is good. But the idea that content creators don't use iPhones or Samsungs, I just don't get that. And the big difficulty I had with the Xperia 1-2, which, by the way, Sony, could you ever come up with some more sensible phone names? Really? The Xperia 1-2? Really? But the big problem I had with that is they pitched it largely on its ability to get under the hood of the camera and tinker around with the settings there. The two issues were, number one, the way that you did that, the way that you tinkered around with the settings, it was very, very difficult to get optimal results compared to a Snap, in my experience using it. That is not necessarily what you would use a smartphone camera for. If you want that level of control, you are going to get a professional photography tool, because that phone costs like 1300 or 1400 euro. This is not something that, and it wasn't better from a photography point of view than, for example, a Samsung S20 that cost 900 euro. It just wasn't. The performance of the lenses, the sensors, the way I tested it anyway, it wasn't better. I was very, very disappointed in that phone. And this phone is better. The Xperia 5-2, in terms of, because you're paying a lot less and the camera performs, it isn't noticeably worse in my view.
I also think it's going to be much more widely available. In fact, I think the predecessor, the Xperia 1-2, wasn't available in Ireland at all, except online. Mm. But the Xperia 5-2 is going to be in a couple of the operators' air in the next couple of weeks, if it's not in store already. And price-wise, it certainly is a lot more affordable. I don't know if you saw the Marques Brownlee video recently on the Sony Xperia 1-2, and he made some very, very interesting points. I do think the last 3 or 4 handsets that they put out have been really, really good phones, and they are sort of a little bit different to what everyone else is doing, and that maybe we should embrace that, and it is good for any company
just to have diversity. Yeah,
but MKBHD, he made the point, as many kind of reviewers have made, that Sony has a big job to do in terms of smartphones with regard to marketing. To take an example, and this is probably a little bit unfair, so I do apologize, Ciarán, if you're listening. The Apple event recently for the launch of the iPhone had 2.5 million people at one point watching live stream on YouTube. But that doesn't account for all of the people that may have been watching on Apple devices, iPhones, iPads, through other mediums than YouTube, or if you have an Apple TV at home, as I was watching the event on. 2.5 million people on YouTube live stream. The YouTube live stream for the launch of the Xperia 5 Mark II had 9,000 people watching at its peak. So that's a measure of the job that Sony has to do. And Marques Brownlee made that very good point. But like him, I think it would be really great to see Sony, getting that right, because I do think we need a bit of diversity, and we do need smartphones that can do stuff a little bit differently.
Mm.
I don't think the Xperia 5-2 is a phone for the mainstream in the same way that, as you just said, the Xperia 1-2 wasn't a phone for the mainstream.
Yeah.
But it's still good that people are making them. Like gaming handsets, they're not for the mainstream either, but they've got some pretty amazing features.
Yeah, and also, if you're into gaming, you know that about, if the gaming handset launches, like you mentioned Asus there, I was road testing the ROG 3 there a few weeks back, and gamers know about that phone. You will know when one of those phones will come out. If you're a content creator or you're making, you're not necessarily going to know that the Xperia 1-2 has come out. Now, it's complicated with Sony, because I'm very sentimental about Sony. I actually like Sony as a brand. And I'm not just saying that. I bought a new telly. And when the lockdown was coming, we've had a Sony TV as our main TV for 10 years. Not 4K, because 4K wasn't around then. It was 1080p, 40-inch telly. Very nice, performed very well. I went to buy a new one last weekend. Knew the lockdown was coming, wanted to treat ourselves. And I said, listen, do you know what? I'm going to buy an OLED. I'm going to like really push the boat out. I did my research. I had bought a mid-range Panasonic last year for another room. and liked it. It was grand. And I quite like the idea of, you know, Panasonic. I like the way Panasonic do things. And one of the big retailers, Harvey Norman, have this incredible deal where they're selling last year's absolute top Panasonic TV, which everybody said was the best TV launch last year, which was the GZ2000. They're selling it for more than, like, less than half price. Now, it's still four figures, but it's a huge discount. And on my way driving to the store, I actually thought to myself, do you know what? I don't want to get a Panasonic TV as a main TV next year. I want to get a Sony TV. I actually like Sony. Sony is an audiovisual company. They're rarely first or at the cutting edge anymore, but they do things really nicely. And I'm used to their headphones and everything. But so I got to the shop, had a look at the GZ2000. Great speaker and everything on it, which is very rare for a TV. And then I went over and I looked at Sony's slightly lesser spec, but still very good. I think it's the A8 model, and still kind of pretty expensive. On sale, I bought the Sony, and I'm very, very happy with it. Touch wood. So all this is by way of saying I don't have anything against Sony. I actually love Sony. I really like Sony. I'm nostalgic. I really love the fact that there still is at least one major retail brand that is really big into, you know, hi-fi and audio visual stuff. Panasonic's the same. You know what I'm talking about. Technics, right? You know? But when it comes to smartphones, you need more than that good feeling to sell me a smartphone. You have to be coming with something really distinct. Now, you know, it's not a bad looking phone. Like, this is quite a good looking phone. It's a nice shape. Sony have really upped their game in the last year or two. But don't come at me with a €1,400 phone that only barely matches what flagships €300 cheaper are doing, and tell me that if I just think about it in the right way as a content creator, that I'll appreciate. Like, don't do that. Rant over.
Probably an unfair question to hurl at you this late in the podcast, but we've talked about a vast range of them there. What's been your favorite phone this year? Is it going to be one of the new iPhones?
I'd say for value, I have to say for absolute straight out, this is amazing value, I would pick two phones. One would be actually the Google Pixel 4a, which is under $400. And the other is earlier this year, Nokia's 5.3 phone, which was £180, which there's nothing about it that's very powerful, but it does everything to a really decent minimum standard. And for £180 for a 6-inch phone to do all that stuff well, I was really impressed with. It's going to be very, very hard to beat the iPhone 12. I'm just going to say it. It's not just because it's the latest thing. It's going to be very hard to beat. I've had the S20 Ultra. I've had the Note 20. I've had all the big Huawei's.
You've had the foldables.
Had the Galaxy Fold 2, Samsung's phone. Nice phone. Interesting, but still feels like early technology in the sense that you only ever fold it out when you're sitting on the couch or lying in bed. You never fold it out when you're walking out and about. So really what you really have is a kind of a skinny, big, thick phone. That's really what you have when you buy the Galaxy Fold 2. And by the way, you're paying over $2,000 for it. So it's very hard to compare that against the iPhone 12, which is more powerful, are certainly faster according to the benchmarking tests. And so I'd say,
without wishing to make this an Apple love-in, I'd probably be the same as you. Some of the other Irish tech journalists give me gentle stick at times that I get too excited about too many phones and that they're all just smartphones. But
no, that's not true.
The iPhone 12, I haven't been as excited about a new phone as I am about that in a long, long time. It's got some really, you know, really fantastic enhancements. It was great to see you raving about the improvements to the ultra wide camera.
Yeah. So it has a lens correction feature where you're using the ultra wide. beforehand, you would notice that the side, that in the corners, it was warping and bending, and it doesn't do that anymore, which is fantastic. Now, that's a software upgrade. It's a thing that you can click on and off in settings that you can't do in the iPhone 11. But also, computation, it's handling the light that it lets in just better than the iPhone 11. And the iPhone 11 was good. I mean, it was good at doing this. But the iPhone 12 is just much better. Also, the night side, the night mode is noticeably better on the 12 than it was in the 11. And I think that's a computational issue, because which would then beg the question, well, if it's a computational issue, can they not just do a firmware update for, you know, the iPhone 11, for example? I'm presuming that's where the new chip comes in, the A14 Bionic, I'm assuming, unless they're just deliberately trying to keep blue water between those two brands, which is legitimate as well. But yeah, I wouldn't agree with that statement that, you know, all the phones are the same. I mean, if they were, then why would anyone buy anything other than that Nokia 5.3 for 180 euro? Like, why? If they were just the same. Like, that's like saying that you just need a car. Now, on one level, that's kind of correct. I mean, if you have a Ford Focus, you know, decent, you know, mid-compact car, right? You know, why would you ever need, you know, something with a little bit more, something a bit bigger, unless you had way more kids or you were lugging stuff around? But that's, I mean, that's... I don't know. There is some legitimacy for that argument, but it's most people don't believe in it, because if they did, they wouldn't buy iPhones. You know, I don't know, but that's a wider argument. I was doing a presentation this week to Sandyford Business District about working from home, and I was showing a picture of a bungalow in Leitrim, and I was gently chiding the mostly middle-aged audience that I was speaking to. All of you people, you keep saying that it's going to be heaven for, you know, young people, that they're not going to have to pay rents in these, you know, one bedroom apartments anymore in Dublin City, and they're free. Well, this is what you get. You know, you get a bungalow in Leitrim or Westmeath or Roscommon, and I love those counties. Nothing wrong with it, but it's not as simple as just saying, look, all you need is this, and then you'll be away in hack. There's more to life. There's, you know. Life's kind of complicated, you know? Again, second rant over.
Listen, it's been great talking to you today. Aren't we very lucky that we get to try out all of these smartphones? And aren't the customers and the consumers out there very lucky too? Because it really has been a fantastic year for smartphones.
Isn't it great? Aren't we great? And isn't the whole thing great? Aren't we lucky to be alive? Aren't we? Shouldn't that the main thing? Of course, you're right, and we are, and we're kind of in a very privileged position. Mark Kavanagh, thank you very much for joining us today, as always, and thanks for your contributions that have contributed to this podcast being shortlisted in the NNI Awards for 2020. And that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Adrian Michael, the tech editor of the Irish and Sunday Independent, bye-bye.